Haman has been absolutely mortified by the fact that Mordecai has not bowed to him at the command of the king, who issued an order that everybody in the kingdom would bow to Haman, the second in command, the prime minister, who has been elected as prime minister because the king had two eunuchs who were seeking to have him killed. Mordecai told Esther told the king, the plot was foiled. The two men who were two of the eunuchs who guarded the doors and the servants in the organization of Xerxes were hanged by the king. And the king needed to replace those two, and so he replaced them with Haman. And Haman came along, and he was so upset with Mordecai not bowing that he decided that he would just punish all the Jews. And so he went to the king, Xerxes, and said, "Xerxes, we've got some problems with the Jews. Can I just have them annihilated?" And the king said, "Well, they're your people. You know, they're for you. Here's my signet ring. Go write the edict and just go take care of the people." And Haman offered Xerxes 10,000 talents of gold if the king would allow him to kill the Jews. And Xerxes says, "Keep the money. It's yours. Just go take care of the people. Take care of my kingdom." So Haman issues this order. The order goes out, and on the day it arrives in Susa, which is on the 13th of Nisan, all of the people in Susa read the edict, and all the Jews are absolutely crushed. They are in despair. Now, it will take another 90 days for the edict to go throughout the entire empire of the Persian Empire, but on the very first day, Nisan the first, Mordecai puts on sackcloth. He covers himself with ashes and dirt and soot, and he goes to the king's gate, which was against the law. You had to be in your finest to go to the king's gate. Esther finds out that Mordecai is out there. She sends beautiful garments for him to put on, and he refuses to put them on. The eunuch that she sends to redress him, conversation goes back and forth, and finally she finds out about the edict to have all the Jews annihilated. Folks, if that annihilation became a fact 11 months later, then every Jew in the entire known world would have been destroyed, and we would not have had a Savior, and there would not have been a book of Malachi, and there would not have been a book of Matthew or Mark or Luke. There'd be, the story would have been over. And yet there were many, many promises in the Old Testament that still had to be fulfilled for the Jews, for Israel. And so God is in control. Esther goes in, speaks to the king. The king says, "Esther, what is wrong with you?" She says, "I am throwing a banquet. Would you please come and bring Haman with me?" And as you remember the story from last week, Haman shows up and he is delighted. And so the king asks Esther what in the world that she would like, and it could be hers up to half the kingdom, whatever she requested. And Esther just did not have the gumption to bring it up for some reason. Well, on the way out of the house, away from the queen, Haman goes through the gate, and lo and behold, there is Mordecai. And Mordecai does not bow. He does not bend at all to Haman, and it just frustrates him to no end. And Haman cannot let it go. Haman has the world by the tail. He's in charge of everything. He has the signet ring of the king. He can write anything in the king's name. He can send it out. And King Xerxes absolutely, truly does not know what's going on. In fact, when we get through with this story, you're going to wonder how in the world Xerxes even ruled his kingdom, because he didn't know what the people around him was doing. He was just off in la-la land for all practical purposes. And that's going to come through as we get closer and closer. And in this story, we're going to see how Xerxes made some real faux pas in his leadership. In fact, he's going to make so many faux pas, it's not in our lesson, but Xerxes will only live just about 6 years after this story is over. He will be killed, as well as the son who is supposed to reign on the throne, which is going to end up with the son of Vashti, who he disposed of because she would not come to his banquet. That son that was, she was pregnant at that point in time when she was disposed of, that son is going to end up being the next king, because the son that he wanted to be king, the rightful son, is going to die on the same day that Xerxes dies, just about 6 years after this story is over. We're in 473 B.C. Everything in this lesson and next lesson is going to tie up in 473 B.C. We're here last week for two chapters. We're here this week for two chapters, and we'll be in this for three chapters next week. But don't worry, the last chapter only has three verses in it. Chapter 10 has to verse 1, 2, and 3. I don't even know why it's there. I do know why it's there. It's just summing everything up. So Haman is just really infuriated when Mordecai does not bow to him. How dare Mordecai not bow? Haman has just had wine at the queen's banquet with the king. No one else is there except for the servants. Haman is hot stuff. He is just floating on air. But he's got this one little thorn in his flesh, this Jew by the name of Mordecai, that had he handled Mordecai 60 days before, Mordecai would already be dead. But no, he doesn't want to handle Mordecai by himself. He wants to handle the entire plot and lot and group of the Jews, the Israelites. Now, I will tell you something. I'm going to tell you something strange. That is something I learned out of the book of Esther many, many years ago, and probably some of y'all never, ever, ever, ever realized what I'm fixing to tell you out of the book of Esther. Almost 40 years ago, my very first church, one of my youth did something wrong. So I just made a rule for all the youth. It was a stupid rule, and the parents thought so. I didn't last six more hours at that church. First weekend in October 1974. Nope, I didn't last. Stupid rule. You know what I learned out of that? When you have a problem with people in your organization, you handle the person, not the group. Because just as sure as you try to handle the group, you're going to get burned. And I got that out of the book of Esther. Because I got fired. Just stupid. The way I hollered at the kids and everything, it just wasn't right. I was just trying to make a rule, get them all in place. It's one of those things. It was a learning curve. I was just barely 18. You know what? I was young. The kids were, some of them were my age. It's all right. I ended up at a better church within the next 2 days. Anyway, it really did. By Wednesday night, I was in another church, already called to be the minister of music at another church. That was on Sunday night. And Wednesday night, I had a new job, making $25 more a month. That's right. I was making $50 at the first church and $75 at the second. Starving. In that length of time, I lost 120 pounds. Ooh, maybe I need to get fired. Haman goes home and he's furious, and he's just, he cannot get Mordecai out from underneath his skin. He's letting it bother him. It's just the worst thing in the world. Why? He's got all the money he could ever need. He's got all the power he could ever need. He could just flick his finger and have Mordecai really handled, because he's got that power. He just doesn't realize it because he's second in command. And he lets Mordecai, that he's not bowing, just tear him apart. Now, can any of y'all relate to that? That really everything in the world is going great for you except for just one little pipsqueak. Or one little issue about something that just causes all the joy in your life to go to the gutter. We've all been there. We've all been there. For those of y'all that, if that is happening at your work, let me make a suggestion to you. If you're mad enough to write your resignation letter, write the resignation letter and lock it up in a briefcase. Put a chain around it with a padlock. Wait 3 weeks and then open up the briefcase, reread the letter, and see if you really want to turn it in. Tear up the letter. Chain up the briefcase. The next time you get mad and you're ready to quit work because it's just... You got a great job. You got a paycheck coming in. You do your work. You come, go to work. You do everything. It's just that one person in the office is just furious. Write your letter. Unchain the briefcase. Stick it in the briefcase. Lock it up. Wait 3 weeks and reopen the briefcase. Either that or just go to your Word document, update it, and put a new date on it, on the old one, and stick it back in there. And hopefully the administrators of your computers has not found your resignation letter and turned it in for you. Haman cannot get past it. Just cannot get past it. So he's gone to the house. He's pulled in his chief advisors. By the way, his house is attached to the palace and the palace walls. And his wife, Zeresh, listened to Haman just go on and on and on and on about Mordecai. And Zeresh, his wife, says, well, Haman, honey, just go out here and build a hangman's noose out here on the building by our house. And 50 cubits high, that's 75 feet high, and just go hang him. Get it over with. Or go to King Xerxes in the morning and ask for permission to hang him. So Haman can't wait. He has it built. They fixed that thing. He's got that noose out there swinging in the wind. He can't wait till the morning, till the sun comes up, and probably even before the sun comes up, to get down to the king's court to just to ask the king for Mordecai's life. Hang that guy. Oh, the problem is that's over in Haman's house. We got other problems over in Xerxes' house. He can't sleep. He's got insomnia. Verse 1. During the night, the king could not sleep, so he gave orders to bring the book of records, the chronicles, and they were read before the king. Now, I'm trying to figure out, because it doesn't say, were those records so boring that he thought they would help him go to sleep? Boring things about his own life. It's the records of the king. Or are they going to keep him up? I don't know about you, but whenever I start thinking about some of the things that have happened in my life, I can't go to sleep. It keeps me up. But he calls for the records. So in comes the record keeper. In comes the servants who are all going to be around him. And they read about it. Lo and behold, it says, and it was found written that Mordecai had reported concerning Bigthanah and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs who were doorkeepers, that they had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. Now that's Xerxes. And the king said, what honor and or dignity has been bestowed upon Mordecai for this? Then the king's servants who attended him said, that means we got people in the room while he's in his bedchamber, attending him, looking over him, watching over him, listening to the chronicles. And they say, nothing's been done. Nothing has been done for him. Well, my goodness. King can't sleep. He can't sleep. Now he's got something else to worry about. How come I have not rewarded this man? What can I do for him? I need to do something special. What can I do? He's pacing the floor. What can I do? He's waiting for the sun to come up. Now, that's not in the scripture. I'm just making this stuff up. But that's what's going on. It's what you would be doing. You'd be sitting on the side of the bed. Your wife would be saying, honey, will you lay down? Will you just lay down? This alarm clock's not going off. You want to go to Kelly's Deep Breakfast? No, we can't go to Kelly's Deep Breakfast. It's too early. Then we won't open for another hour. Sun's not even up. You want to do what, honey? Lay on down. He's pacing the floor. He's excited. He cannot wait. Verse 4, so the king said, who is in the court? Oh, you know, we have a pastor that's just like that. Brother John, he gets something on his mind. He can't get off his mind. You don't want to be the staff member that's in the wrong place at the wrong time. I walked in the building one day. He was walking in the building. Wanted to find somebody. Who's in the building? I need something. Dr. Jim, I got this idea. We need some more ushers who are attending at these doors right here. He said, can you handle that? I said, no, that's Emery's position. Well, you go tell Emery for me, okay? That's off Brother John's mind. He's gone. I can picture this for what Xerxes is doing. He has said, who's out there? Haman has come early to ask for Mordecai if he can hang him. And Xerxes is saying, who's out there? Go get somebody. You eunuchs, go find me somebody. I've got something I have got to do. So now Haman had just entered into the outer court of the king's palace in order to speak to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows, which he had prepared for him. And the king's servant said to him, "Behold, Haman is standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in. Get him in here. Oh, Dr. Jim, come on in here. Oh, Emery, come here. Oh, I got to talk to you about something. I had this vision just a few minutes ago about building a big old cross. I came over the belt. You had to come the back way. I couldn't come the other way. So I came down Red Bluff and cut over in Island Genoa and came over. I thought, we need a cross right there." I never will forget that day. We were having a group meeting for the vision of this building and the youth building, and he walked in. He couldn't wait to tell us. Couldn't wait. What do you think? You think? I'm going, ching, 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 ching. You know, I'm going, okay, yay. Listen, we want to get on this right now. Xerxes, Haman, come on in here. Get him in here. I got this thing we got to do. Get him in here. So let him come in. Can you imagine how Haman came in? Get this. Okay, just picture this. Because you know this had to happen. So Haman came in and the king said to him, "Haman, Mr. Haman, Sir Haman, Prime Minister Haman, Knight Haman, I don't care, whatever it is, the king wants to see you." Well, the day before, he was invited to a banquet with the queen. And he's just been selected by the king to be the second in command of the entire kingdom. Ooh. Now, if you were Haman, or I was Haman, we just got too big for our britches right then and there. The king wants to see me? Well, sure. Firing squad coming right now. Yes, sir. So Haman came in, and the king said to him, "What is to be done for the man whom the king desires to honor?" Don't read on. I'm Haman. I got that? No, I tell you what, let's do this better. You're Haman, and I'm the king. If any of y'all have ever sat in front of Frank Hale, when you're going to tell him what your story is and why you need to win a court case, he will say to you, "All right, he's sitting back there so I can do this. Let's pretend that you're the judge and I'm talking to you." And he lays the whole scenario out for you that you just laid out for him. And he says, "Now, judge, what would you say?" 99, just like ivory soap. 99.99% of the time, when you're the judge rehearing what you just said, you think, "Frank, you're a fool for even talking to me like that. That sounded pretty stupid to me." And Frank will say, "Exactly. Exactly." He's good about that. Role-playing back to you what you just built up in your mind and said. He's probably the best at doing it. You're Haman and I'm the king. Haman, what's to be done for the man that I wish to honor, or the woman that I wish to honor, since we got ladies here? Now, what's going on inside of your little head and your heart? Exactly what's in the next line. And Haman said to himself, "Whom would the king desire to honor more than me?" Well, kingy, since we've gotten close, you know, we're pals now. And I'm second command. Hey, I still got your ring on that you gave to me to do rules and regulations and edicts and take care of them little Jew problems we got over there. And by the way, I'm going to not forget to see you later on this afternoon when we visit Queenie's, you know, banquet area, because we're going to sip wine together. They weren't Baptist. Verse 7. I'm skipping the commentary. You're going to have to read it on your own, because this is going a whole lot better in the commentary. Verse 7, and it did earlier this morning too. Then Haman said to the king, here's Haman's suggestion. Oh, he's had time to think about it. What would I like? Oh, what would you like? What would you like? I forgot, I'm the king, you're Haman. What would you like? So you say to the king, for the man whom the king desires to honor, today you'd say, and that would be me, let him bring a royal robe which the king has worn right out of his closet. I mean, it's been hanging on a hanger right next to the one that he's wearing right now. Got that? And the horse on which the king has ridden. one of your steeds, big old beautiful white horse. It's got all the king's saddle and everything on it, robe and a horse, and on whose head a royal crown has been placed. You know, you got one for every day of the week. Just take one of those crowns and put it on that man's head. I am sure Haman is already looking into some piece of polished brass, seeing him with that robe and that crown, sitting on that white horse with all the gold and the silver and the bells and everything hanging off of it. And he sees his face, and he's got drool coming down on either side of his mouth because he is so excited, because who else would the king want to honor and give dignity to except for me, Haman says. Verse 9. And let the robe and the horse be handed over to the one of the king's most noble princesses. And let them array the man whom the king desires to honor and lead him on horseback through the city square and proclaim before him, thus it shall be done to the man whom the king desires to honor. King, now, you don't want to just give those things directly to the man that you want to honor. What you want to do is you want to take one of your seven princesses and pick him out and hand this stuff to him and have that prince go dress that man that you want to honor, put him on that horse, and lead him through the streets, right? You know, downtown Houston is what it could be. Go down San Jacinto and up Louisiana. We got great names for our streets, don't we? We don't have anything like Herald Square down there, anything like in Fifth Avenue, anything that's got some oomph to it. No, it's San Jacinto, Carolina, and Louisiana. But anyway, they're good streets. You can catch the other ones like Franklin and Congress and whatever those are. Yeah, you got them. It's not Rodeo Drive. That's exactly right. And you're going to lead him, let that prince lead him through his seats and proclaim, anyone else who does something great like this, the king will do this for you too. Can you imagine? Haman can see himself. He can feel the crown. He can feel the robe. He can feel the ride of the horse. The king's horse, the king's robe, the king's crown placed upon his head. Mercy. That's almost as good as sitting in one of Brother John's deer blinds for 8 hours. 4x4 made out of plywood, little bitty slits where you can look through. Almost as good. Well, the king said to Haman, take quickly the robe, take the horse, as you have said, and do so for Mordecai the Jew, who is sitting at the king's gate, and do not fall short in anything of all that you have said. Can you imagine? Okay, just this is a visual. You cannot listen to this on the tape and see it happen, okay? You got to see it. Here Haman is standing before the king. And the king says, do it for Mordecai. Inside, Haman must have been stuttering, going, excuse me? You didn't want to do this for me? You want me to do this for Mordecai, who's outside your gate right now in sackcloth? He's covered in dirt. He's got soot all over him. I mean, he's the filthiest man in the entire area. He's stinky. He hadn't had a bath in the last 60 days since the edict went out. And you want me to do this for Mordecai? Mordecai didn't even follow your instructions to bow before me when I'd pass beside him. You won't. Nope, Haman doesn't say anything. What does Haman do? So Haman took the robe and the horse and arrayed Mordecai and led him on horseback through the city square and proclaimed before him, thus it shall be done to the man whom the king desires to honor. I wonder how many times he actually said that. As the people saw him riding through, he probably waited till there were great gaps in the people before he said it. That's probably what I would do and you would do. You wouldn't actually say it with a bunch of people there to hear it. Then Mordecai returned to the king's gate. Mordecai, he has on a crown of the king, a robe of the king. His face still has soot and dirt on it. He's still got sackcloth on him underneath the robe, But there he is at the king's gate. Look what Haman does. And Haman hurried home, mourning, with his head covered. Pulled up his thing over his head and went on home. And he is mourning inside. He is crushed inside. He has had it inside. He has tried to handle Mordecai by handling the entire people of the Jews. And now he has had to, the person he wanted to hang from the noose that he had placed on his house the night before, he was going to try to hang Mordecai there. Now he has to go back and see that noose hanging there, and he has not been able to even ask the king whether he could hang Mordecai. No, he had to prance him on Prancer through the streets. Poor Zeresh, Haman's wife, she shows up. And Haman recounted to Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends, everything that had happened to him. And then the wise men and Zeresh, his wife, said to him, you know, this is really very prophetic, even though it's not from prophets. If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish origin, if he's a Jew, you will not overcome him, but you will surely fall before him. In other words, you will surely fall before him. How do they know that? Let me take you back to the fall of the northern kingdom. 722 BC. When Sargon II takes up where his father has started and destroys and takes all the northern kingdom into exile, that 10% of the Jews who went into exile flourished where they went. They were so strong and so powerful that the king could not move them. He could not do any edicts against them because of God's grace upon that 10% of the northern kingdom that landed over in Assyria. When the exiles were taken out of Judea in 606 BC, within 24 months, a young Jewish boy by the name of Daniel is the prime minister of the entire Babylonian Empire. He's Jewish, and he's got three of his friends, Hanani, Azariah, and Mishael, as his partners to help rule over all the 120 provinces that are in the Babylonian Empire. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's the names you know them by. They're Jewish boys, and they flourished. God took them into exile to punish their people for the sin, but wherever they went, God took care of them, and they became a great and mighty people. Even when the Persian Empire overthrew the Babylonian Empire, lo and behold, the Jews continue to flourish and be powerful. Zeresh, the wife of Haman, and his wise men know that if he's Jewish, you have just bit off more than you can chew, Haman, and you've already begun to fall before him, and you will continue to fall, and you will be destroyed if you attack that man, Mordecai. Well, it's too late. It's absolutely too late, because Haman, while he's listening to these words, here comes a knock at the door. And while they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hastily brought Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. Hastily. He's been out prancing around Mordecai on a horse through the town, and now he's gone back and he's having a Texas-sized pity party before his family. And you know what that means, Texas size. Everything's bigger and, yeah, he's having a big pity party. And the knock's coming at the door. They've come to get him hastily. They return with him. That means he's late. He's late for the meeting with the king and the queen. He's late. Now the king and Haman came to drink wine with Esther the queen. And the king said to Esther on the second day also as they drank their wine at the banquet, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even to half of the kingdom it shall be done for you. This is a wise man husband in some ways. Now, he was very, very unwise in giving his ring away and letting his prime minister make an edict that he didn't even know really what the edict said. But it went out. But he is wise in this. When Xerxes saw his wife the day before come to the door, he saw her. He brought her in. He saw that there was something in her eyes that she was worried about. And he said, What is your request? Ask of me anything, honey. I will give it to you up to half of my kingdom, whatever you want. If you want those diamond earrings we saw in Arabia the other day, if you want the gold of Ophir that we saw there, what do you want? If you want some of the silk from the eastern countries that we are in control, what do you want? Whatever it is yours, up to the cost of half the kingdom that I control. That was yesterday. She could not bring herself to ask for a correction of what Haman had done. So she asked for a banquet instead. And then she asked for them to come back because she couldn't bring herself to ask for Haman's punishment of Haman at the banquet the day before. So she asked them to come back. And now the king has not forgotten that she still had that trouble in her eyes. Men, most of you will see trouble in your eyes today, and your wife will still have those trouble in her eyes tomorrow, but you've already passed on and gone down the road. You've already forgotten because she didn't answer you. She just kind of put it off. She's still staring out to the window on this side. You know what I'm talking about. You're driving down the road. Everything seems pretty good. Next thing you know, husbands, you look over and your wife's doing this. And you say, honey, is something wrong? It's either no or nothing. And she doesn't even turn and look at you. And you're saying inside your mouth without saying a word, uh-oh. And if she doesn't answer you, by the time you get where you're going, she's going to act like nothing's wrong. And you're going to think, okay, she's over it. Right there I would say, uh-oh, because she ain't over it. Queen's not over it. He's smart. Only thing he's smart about in this whole story. Well, yeah, only thing. Yeah, probably is. The queen says, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me as my petition and my people as my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, to be annihilated. Now, if we had only been sold as slaves and men and women, I would have remained silent, for the trouble would not be commensurate with the annoyance of the king. King, if we had only been sold into slavery, my people have lived through slavery and we can live through it again. Had we only been sold into exile, my people have lived through exile. By the way, by this time, they're out of exile. Mordecai, had he wanted to, he could pack up bags and head back to the promised land. They've been out of exile for 70 years. There's nothing keeping there except for families that were intermarrying that had happened during the time that they were in exile, and many of them didn't want to leave their families. They were established over in Babylon and Iran and Iraq, and those are the names we call them today, and so they didn't want to go back to the promised land. But Bukus, 42,300-something or 600-something, went back to the promised land, and then another group back, and then Ezra took another group back. But we're 70 years past all that. Mordecai could have gone back. Esther's saying, look, had it just been for us to be sold into slavery, my people and I would not even have brought it up. But we have been sold to death. The decree, the edict, whatever has been done is to annihilate us. Every single Jew in the world, we are to die. Verse 5. Then King Ahasuerus said, Queen Esther, who is he and where is he? Who would presume to do this? Every time I read this, I think about Nathan coming into David. Nathan says to David, David, we have a little problem in your kingdom. You see, there's this man who owns many, many cattle, many, many sheep. And it came time for a banquet. And there was one man over here that he didn't have all those cattle and sheep. He had one precious lamb that he had raised from just a little bitty kid. And he raised it. And it was the family pet. Is the most gracious, the most wonderful lamb. It was a fantastic lamb. And that man, instead of slaughtering one of his for the banquet, took that poor man's lamb. And David said, who is he? Where is he? Who would do such a thing? And I always think about Nathan kind of being hunched over, you know, holding out his hand with an old crooked finger and saying, it was you. You're the man. And David immediately knew. Xerxes has some ownership in this deal. Who is he? Where is he? He's the one who gave the ring to Haman and said, just issue the decree. They're your people. Take care of them. Keep your money. Doesn't matter. Who is he? Who is he? Now, I'm wondering what Haman is thinking. For some reason, also in my mind, now this is not in the Bible, but this is what I think probably happened. Haman is sipping his wine as Esther asked that question. And then he stops and goes, this is another one of those things where if you're listening on tape, it just doesn't look right. Because his eyes go looking back and forth. He must know now. He must know. She's talking about him. He's got to know. He has to know. Who would presume to do this? The king says, and Esther said, a foe and an enemy. And she points to Haman and said, it is the wicked Haman. And then Haman became terrified before the king and the queen. Now, I don't know about you, but about the time he's sipping the wine, he knows it's him. I'm sure his stomach just turned upside down. Things have just gone south in his kingdom that he is in control of as second in command as the prime minister. And he is absolutely upset. He is terrified. And the king rose in his anger from drinking wine and went into the palace garden. But Haman made a tactical error. It doesn't say tactical error, but I put that in. Haman makes a tactical error and stayed behind to beg for his life from Queen Esther. For he saw that harm had been determined against him by the king. Folks, let's back this up. The king knows he has got to do something, but he does not do a knee-jerk reaction. He does not make a from-the-hip decision like a lot of people would make. He's got to think about this because this is his queen and this is his prime minister. And 60 days before, he had to hang two of his other helpers because they were plotting against him. So what does Xerxes do? He goes out into the garden to think. Had Haman had any brains, he would have followed the king out because he had every right to do so. But as prime minister, he had the right to go and come and be in the presence of the king at any time he wanted to, just like those seven princesses had. And the king had come along and put Haman in between them so they couldn't come to him because they gave him bad advice. But Haman should have followed him out into the garden to explain. No, he stays behind to beg for a woman who really has no authority. Except for she happens to be the queen. That's all the authority she has. She happens to be loved by Xerxes too, as we know in the story. And so, and she is just beautiful, and Xerxes loves her. And lo and behold, he stays back. And now when the king returned from the palace garden to the palace where they were drinking wine, Haman was falling all over on the couch where Esther was. And the king said, will he even assault the queen with me in the house? And as the words went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Can you imagine? Instead of doing what he should have done as a man and gone out to talk to the king, who he was his boss, direct boss, had direct access to, no, he stays back. Esther is laying on her divan, the couch, and Haman is over there going, oh, please, save my life. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do this. He's touching her. He's all over her. And the king walks in and says, what? I'm in the house. I know I just came back in from the palace garden where I had that beautiful mosaic tile, where I'd thrown that banquet 10 years before to try to show my wife Vashti how beautiful she was, where all the nobles were there, and I'd showed all my wealth, and with the beautiful curtains that would hang. I've come in from the garden, and now I'm back into the Esther's palace area where she drinks in the banquet room, and you're all over her, and I'm here. Don't you at least have the decency to do it when I'm not here instead of when I'm here? You're a fool. You're an idiot. And those servants knew the tone of the voice of Xerxes so well that as soon as they started talking, I think they grabbed a pillowcase, if they had pillowcases, and they put it over his head and they covered his face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs who were before the king, said, behold, indeed, the gallows standing at Haman's house, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on behalf of the king. Harbona. Remember Hebrew names if you're doing Bible study by yourself. and you come across a name in Hebrew, and there's lots of them, every one of the names, be it Teman or Kenan or Kizat or Jael or Rasha or whatever, go look up what the name means. The name here for this eunuch meant that he was barren, that he could not have children. And therefore, he was what is considered a natural eunuch, and he was in the service of the king. And so, lo and behold, he tells the king that Haman had that noose. I can just see it. King, when I was coming to work this morning, as I was rounding the corner here, coming down, I saw that Haman had a big old noose, 75 foot in the air, hanging right in front of his house off the wall of the palace. And Xerxes says, string him up. No, he didn't say that. He says, hang him from it. If he's Texan, he'd say string him up, wouldn't he? Hang him from it. I'm sure it took about 10 minutes to get him to the top of that roof, put that noose around his neck, and throw him off. So they hanged Haman on the gallows, which he had prepared for Mordecai, and the king's anger subsided. And here we are again at the end of that chapter, but we can't stop right there. We got to go to at least one or two more verses. And on that day, King Ahasuerus, that's Xerxes, gave the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, to Queen Esther. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had disclosed what he was to her. Esther had told the king that Mordecai was her first cousin. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken away from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Everything that Haman owned, his kids, his wife, his jewels, his gold, his whatever he had, now belonged to Esther. And Esther turned right around and said, Mordecai, I want you to take care of it for me. You manage all of that for me. And Xerxes now knows that his wife is a Jew, and her first cousin is Mordecai. And Mordecai is fixing to be the prime minister in Haman's place. You won't believe what happens next. Because we still have a problem. We've got an edict that cannot be changed. And the king must do something to alter what is going to happen 9 months later. 60 days have passed since the original edict. We're in the third month, which is really only 60 days. We'll find out next week. But all of y'all have Bibles, don't you? Read ahead.